Welcome to Just One Thing, Simple Practices for Resilient Happiness by Dr. Rick Hansen. This is your volunteer programmer, Babs Felix, in Green Valley. Rick Hansen, PhD, is a psychologist and New York Times best-selling author. He's been invited to speak at NASA, Oxford, Stanford, Harvard, and meditation centers worldwide. His books are available in 28 languages and include Making Great Relationships, Hardwiring Happiness, Just One Thing, and Mother Nurture. His work has been featured on the BBC, CBS, NPR, and other major media. And now, Just One Thing. Are you growing? The practice. Learn as you go. Why? By learn as you go, I mean that each day is an opportunity to take in the good, to help useful or enjoyable experiences sink in and become part of you. Then, when you go to sleep, you'll be a little stronger, a little more resilient, a little wiser, a little more loving, and a little happier than you were when you woke up in the morning. This kind of learning is not memorizing a multiplication table. It's emotional learning, somatic learning. It's becoming more skillful with the world around you and the world inside you. It's social learning, motivational learning, and even spiritual learning. It's learning from the past and growing strengths for the future. It's becoming more compassionate, confident, patient, capable, and joyful. This is the learning that matters most. If things fall apart, what's already inside you is what you can really count on. I grew up in a stable and loving home, but for a variety of reasons, I was still very unhappy, awkward, and messed up inside. I didn't know what to do, and it seemed hopeless. Then, about age 15, there was a big turning point when I realized that no matter what things were like at the present time, I could always look for ways to learn and grow from there, to get more skillful, to heal, to grow. I didn't need to despair because it was in my power to develop myself in some way each day. To learn how to talk with other kids, or not to be so irritated by my parents, or to deal with my crazy thoughts. To learn how to make my way in the world. And that was full of hope. We can't do anything about the past, but to quote Captain Kirk in Star Trek, the future is an undiscovered country. It's full of possibilities, including the possibilities of who you are becoming. No one can stop you from learning, and no one can do it for you, which makes the results authentic and yours to own. How? We're having experiences all day long, but what actually sinks in? Usually, it's the moments of stress and sorrow, anxiety and anger, hurt and resentment. Meanwhile, all the many experiences of gratitude, accomplishment, friendliness, feeling cared about, wholesome pleasure, insight, and commitment pass through us like water through a sieve. This is due to the brain's evolved negativity bias, which makes it like Velcro for bad experiences, but Teflon for the good ones. To beat the negativity bias and grow more of the good inside yourself, there are just two steps, but you have to do both of them. The two steps. First, you need to experience whatever you want to grow, such as an insight, an intention, a skill, satisfaction, calming, easing, soothing, or vitalizing. Second, that experience must leave a lasting physical trace behind in neural structure or function. Otherwise, there is no lasting value, no healing, no growth, no learning. The first step is usually easy. Most people have many mildly pleasant or useful experiences each day and just have to notice them. We can also create beneficial experiences, such as calling up the feeling of compassion or determination or remembering what it feels to be like with someone who cares about you. The second, once the song of that experience is playing in your inner iPod, turn on the recorder. This is the step that people routinely skip in everyday life, that therapists, coaches, and teachers, including myself, can fail to do when working with others. But if we miss this step, we've wasted the experience on the brain. There are lots of ways to use the power of experience-dependent neuroplasticity. That's a mouthful. To turn passing experiences into grit and gratitude and other inner strengths hardwired into your nervous system. Try one of these, or try all three of them. First of all, stay with the experience for a breath or two longer. There's a famous saying, neurons that fire together wire together. The longer you keep them firing, the more they will tend to connect together. Feel it in your body as much as possible. This is not about remembering specific events in your life, but about receiving the residues of lived experience into yourself. Focus on what is enjoyable or meaningful about it. As the sense of reward in an experience increases, dopamine and norepinephrine activity in the brain tends to increase as well. These flags experiences as keepers and prioritizes them for long-term storage. You might take these two steps only a few times each day, usually in less than a minute at a time. But bit by bit, synapse by synapse, you'll be growing happiness, love, and wisdom inside yourself. Some profound implications. This practice is simple, down to earth, and natural. It is also profound in a couple of ways. First, experiences are continually changing. As Francis Bacon wrote, we have only this moment, sparkling like a star in our hand and melting like a snowflake. Yet, you can help them leave enduring tracks behind you as they pass through consciousness. Remarkably, you can get lasting value from the melting moment even as you let go of it. Second, as you take in the good over time, you feel increasingly filled up from the inside out. Then it feels like there is enough of a need already met, even as you cope with challenges. This reduces our biologically rooted tendencies toward craving, based on a sense of something missing, something wrong. As we grow an unshakable core of resilient well-being, there is less push inside to fight pain or chase pleasure or cling to other people. Then our footprint in the world and on others becomes lighter, and we also become harder to manipulate with fear or greed or us against them grievances and rivalries. We should certainly act to improve conditions in the world, but that is not sufficient. As we can see in the example of many privileged and affluent people who still see threats around every corner, can't stop piling up more wealth, no matter the cost, and dehumanize and bully others. The sense of enoughness must land in the heart and take root, and if it does in the hearts of enough people, that will change the course of human history. You are listening to Just One Thing, Simple Practices for Resilient Happiness by Dr. Rick Hansen, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff. And here's a quote from Dr. Rick. About a third of our attributes are innate in our DNA, while the other two-thirds are acquired through learning. This is very good news, since it means that we have a great influence over who we become and who we learn to be. And here's another Just One Thing. Did you truly choose this path? The practice? Find your own way. Why? The human body has about 100 trillion cells, plus another 10 quadrillion microscopic critters hitching a ride, most of them beneficial or harmless. Each one of your cells has aims, goals in a sense, controlled by its DNA. Cells conduct processes aimed at particular functions, like building bones or gobbling up harmful invaders. Cells also work together in larger and larger assemblies in pursuit of broader goals, such as the 100 billion neurons in your brain that run the nervous system, which as a whole is itself the master regulator of the body. In effect, there are layers, hierarchies of goals in the body, and a similar architecture of aims in the mind. For example, operating right now is the goal of moving your eyes over these words, which serves the goal of understanding them, which serves larger goals such as desires to learn new things, new skills, and to be truly happy. In short, whether in the body or the mind, there is no life without goals. Trying to transcend goals is itself a goal. The only question is, are your goals good ones? In other words, do they lead to happiness and benefits for you and others rather than suffering and harm? To choose good goals, we must balance the influences of the world in the murmurings of the heart. Some counsel from others is good. I wish I'd listened to my parents' advice to start saving in my 20s rather than in my 50s when I finally got around to it. But often we get nudged, cowed, persuaded, bullied, seduced, enveloped, swept along, or otherwise drawn into values, priorities, gender, or culture roles, perspectives on life, assumptions, addictions, career choices, marriages, spiritual practices or orientations, etc., 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 that in ways large or small are not really, not deeply right for us. And sometimes we are active participants in this process. For example, it was a combination of external hype and internal laziness that led me to try to take a shortcut in my early 30s with my training as a psychologist, which then cost me a couple of years of effort to get back on the right path. In effect, 1,000 little threads tug at us this way and that, many of them originating from within, internalized voices and faces from the past, and shoulds and musts from the present. When these threads pull you from your true course, the one that is authentic, at the intersection of your talents and joys and values, appropriate to your temperament and nature, and filled with heart, you end up feeling sidetracked, caught in a backwater, unfulfilled, unused, adrift, trapped, and even alienated from your own life. Do you have any sense of this yourself? So it's important to find your own way. How? As a frame, know that you can follow your course while also fulfilling your responsibilities. With intention and practice, inner freedom is available while being externally engaged. You make these responsibilities part of your course, an honorable expression of it, informed by it, an opportunity for growth in your own way. Consider how you are not living your own life as much as you could. In relationships, do you make more room for the other person's needs than your own? What aren't you saying? Whose shoulds or plans or taboos are you living out? Especially the ones from childhood. How might you be conforming, even in subtle ways, to scripts or teachings or groupthink or cultural programs? When you get those other voices out of your head, what's left that's true? What silence might be speaking to you? Take a look at parts of your life, such as family or career or a particular relationship. Have you drifted from your own truth in any of these situations? What specific course corrections could you make? What would help you stick with them? Open to guidance outside the box. Draw on, for most people, the right side of your brain for images of your current path and where it could be better to go. Listen to your heart. What in your life is truly working for you that you could strengthen, and what is calling you to learn to lean toward more? Step out of your normal routine for an hour or longer. Go for a long drive or walk. Take a workshop. Spend a day with a dear friend. And look at your life from a bird's eye view, with a sense of possibility and freedom. All right, no praise or blame, but where to head from here? The shift in course could be tiny. It could simply be a matter of adjusting an attitude or spending 20 minutes a day in a new way. But extended forward over the rest of your life, and meanwhile, knowing in your heart that it is true for you, will make all the difference in the world. We make a life a minute at a time. In this minute, you can learn as much as possible toward your own true way. As they say in Tibet, if you take care of the minutes, the years will take care of themselves. You are listening to Just One Thing, Simple Practices for Resilient Happiness by Dr. Rick Hansen, coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff. And we have a little bit of time for some questions and answers from Ask Dr. Rick. Dear Dr. Rick, what changes in our brains when we decide to repeatedly focus on the way that we think about and react to situations in our lives? Answer. In practical terms, learning, which is brain change, it's a two-stage process in which an activated experience must be installed through some kind of lasting change in neural structure or function. We become happier through having repeated experiences of happiness and related factors that get encoded or installed into the brain. Without installation, there is no learning, no change. In effect, the experience is wasted on the brain. This is the dirty little secret in most psychotherapy, human resources training, coaching, addiction recovery, and character education. Most hard-won beneficial states of mind are momentarily positive but have no lasting value. That's why many efforts to develop deep inner strengths in people are largely, if not completely, ineffective. They are indeed being fostered, but without deliberate mindful attention to sustaining them, feeling them in the body, and intentionally absorbing them into oneself, they don't just get encoded very much into the brain. The person may have a memory of a harrowing sailing trip or an intense week with Outward Bound, but is still basically just as vulnerable to stress, loss, or setbacks as ever because they didn't take in those experiences. Here is the key takeaway. It is commonplace to activate experiences of love, support, determination, endurance, and tenacity. What is rarer and more important is to bring skillful attention to installing these experiences in the brain so that they have enduring benefit for the person. The good news is that this skillful attention can be readily developed, as we found in research on my training in positive neuroplasticity, as in hardwiring happiness. But we have to do the work 5, 10, or 20 usually enjoyable seconds at a time. Then we know in our hearts that we have earned the results, which makes the strength that we develop even sweeter. Dear Dr. Rick, where does the reference for the 5, 10, or 20 seconds it takes to commit positive experiences to long-term memory versus a lesser period of time for negative ones come from? Answer: there is no specific number, 5, 10, or 20. Those are just shorthand references I use that seem to work for people. The key is a matter of degree. The longer, the more intense, and the more felt in the body and experience is, the more it will be encoded in neural structure. This is a fundamental and widely known fact in the neuropsychology of learning, including emotional learning. It's also known that negative experiences have an advantage. They get encoded more readily. So we are trying to do two things: steepen the learning curve from useful, beneficial experiences, and compensate for the negativity bias of the brain. You have been listening to Just One Thing, Simple Practices for Resilient Happiness by Dr. Rick Hansen. This is your volunteer programmer, Babs Felix, in Green Valley. Thank you so much for listening today, and I hope that you have a wonderful day. And now, stay tuned for more programming coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona.